Welcome to False Bottom Girls, a podcast about the wonderful yet sometimes confusing world of beer and brewing.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hudson, owner of Pilot Brewing and an advanced cicerone.
Hi, I'm Jen Blair, sensory expert, homebrewer, and advanced cicerone. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. It's your favorite podcasters back on their bullshit after a little bit of a break.
Yeah, we're kind of making it happen.
Yeah, you know, you all are fine. Like, sometimes life's.
Yeah, well, I don't even have an excuse anymore these days. Like, for example, I sent the schedule out to the team at Pilot last week extremely late. And I was like, sorry, guys, I would say that I've just been slammed, but that's just my life. So no excuse. Here's your schedule.
Yeah. You're like calling your employees like, where are you? You're supposed to be here right now, according to the schedule that only I am looking at.
I have one time I set the schedule to only one person for reason. I didn't like put all the names. You think I would have myself set up where I'm just like, scheduled team, you know, something like a group of people, but I don't because I don't even know how to do that in my email. So there's only like 7-8 of them or something. But yeah, so I was like, and it was to Rachel. So she knew what was going on. So I just assumed everyone knew what was going on. And then people were like, where's the schedule? I was like, I set the schedule. And I looked back. I was like, I set the schedule to Rachel. And I don't mean me, everybody. I mean, I have learned that.
They've met Rachel. They've met R2.
R2 Brew 2. That's her Instagram name. R2 Brew 2. She's our lead brewer. Also named Rachel. Also named Rachel Ann, like me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We don't spell either word the same way.
Oh, okay.
I spell it the better way.
Right.
Naturally.
I mean,
naturally.
Yeah, of course.
But the team gave her the nickname R2. I did not. I don't call her R2. Just want to be clear about that. So, yeah, what the fuck was I? Why did I talk about that? Where was I going with that? Oh, being late.
Yeah, life.
Living life. Being slammed. But we did get a good idea from one of our listeners, I believe. This is where our topic came from today, to talk about simple brewing steps, like lautering and boiling and maybe knocking out. Like, honestly, there's so much information about all this stuff. We're going to have to break it into different episodes, and we are. We're going to talk about lautering today. And I guess you need to know a little bit about the brew system to really kind of even know where lautering comes in.
Thank you to our pal, Scott. Hello, Scott. He is the one who sent us this suggestion, and it was so funny because I took a screenshot of it and sent it to Rachel, and she was just like, God damn it.
Yeah.
We really do skip the 1+1. We just say this is 2. And it was one of those things that as soon as we saw the list, we were like, oh yeah. Like, we've talked about milling. We've talked about mashing. We've talked about different fermentation stuff, but we've never actually just talked about the different steps.
Because brewing can be it can be really hard to put into understanding just from reading and listening to people like us until you kind of see it, which is going to be true for this episode too, honestly, when we're talking about the step of lautering. So yeah, why don't you start us off in like quick overview of what happens until we get to the lautering stage?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Master Cicerone. All right, fine. I'm going to start us off. I'm the brewer. She's not, but that's fine.
I do. Right. So side note, everybody, I do know. I'm just being a little rascal.
Yeah. She has the energy for that today.
Right.
But yeah, no, quick overview and the brewing process to get up to the lautering. Lautering is a transfer from the mash to the boil. In our brewing process, we have our grain that has been malted into barley, barley malt. Sorry, I can't talk. We have our fresh grain that has been malted into barley malt or wheat in all of our recipe. We mill it up. We're ready to brew. We stick it in the mash tun. We mix it with water at a certain temperature. We create this porridge-like substance. That is our mash. This is our extraction of fermentable sugars from the malt time. This lasts about an hour. And then the next step is lautering.
You know, I will make a very embarrassing admission.
Yeah.
I promise you, I know the brewing process. But when I first saw that list, and we were like, okay, well, like I can do the outline for lautering, you can do the outline for boiling. In my head, I was like, well, Rachel goes first because it's the boil, and then I go and it's the lauter. And then it, like, in my mind, I was just like, that something doesn't seem right about that. And then I was like, oh my God, I don't know what happened in my brain, but it was just like, yeah, after the boil, you lauter. Which
Why
I
not?
know is not true.
We could try
Yeah, that's true.
Well, you know, in a decoction situation, you would do that.
Oh, see? So yes,
Bam.
I do. I completely understand the brewing process. I just had a moment, which I could have just never told anybody that that
No, I
happened.
love that story.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, Rachel goes first, the boil. And then I talked about lautering. And then I was like,
100%.
that's right. Maybe if we were doing like Memento, like if we were doing the brewing process in the order that we received our schedule for FoBab,
So now you have to explain
Yes. So
to our
I will
listeners.
briefly explain that when we were invited this year to the Festival of Barrel Aged Beers to judge, the schedule in the email started with the end of the day and then went down to the beginning of the day, which is completely psychotic. And I have asked
Yes.
probably like 10 people, like, look at this. And everybody just like immediately gets angry. And I was like,
Yes.
what is this?
I
Why
was
is the
like,
schedule this way?
why does the day start at 3 p.m. and why is it starting with best of show? I don't understand. And then I looked out, I was like, oh, someone's weird. Like, who
Yeah.
writes a schedule like this?
I do understand the starting at the end of the day and working backwards, but then you just flip that for everybody.
Yeah. Yes, if you're
So,
like, I want to be finished by 3:30 or whatever it is, and you like do all that. But yeah, don't give it to me that way. I can't. My brain can't handle that.
right. So, yeah.
I have nope. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, if we're doing it the Memento Brewing way, then we would
Yeah.
boil before we lauter. But that's not the case. So the lauter, as Rachel said, comes after the milling, after the mashing. And the lautering actually is where we got the namesake for our podcast because there's a false bottom involved.
Oh,
Yeah. So when we're talking about lautering, we're talking about separating the wort, the sweet wort from the grain. So we've milled up the grain, like Rachel said, we've made it into this porridge. Now we want to just get the liquid off of that and leave all of the spent grain. In the spirit of one plus one equals two, when we're talking about wort, if you don't know this, that is the extract that's made when we're mixing the hot water with the grain. So it's very sweet. It's just basically sugar water, right? And also that wort is later going to be used by the yeast, all those sugars, to eat for fermentation to produce ethanol and carbon dioxide. So when we're talking about wort, that's what we're talking about. Spent grain is any of like the malt to the grains that are left over after we've mashed and lautered. So when we've pulled all of that liquid off, you just have the grain that you put in to get those sugars out. They're spent grain. So that's what that means. The spent grain goes to farmers. Farmers really like it. They're also good for dog treats. My dogs love them. You can do a lot of things with the spent grains, but you can't like reuse them for brewing,
Yeah,
right?
no,
Because
it's
you've gotten
a
all the
waste
sugars
product.
out of it. Yeah.
But farmers
So
love to pick it up for free. So if you find yourself with a lot of it, you can typically create a relationship. Depends on where you are. It's funny, like Sam Adams in the middle of the city, they have to pay farmers to come and get their grain.
oh, yeah, I bet.
But I just have, most breweries here in Charlotte, the farmers just happy to pick it up. Because it's free
Right.
feed for them, but it's very difficult to get that done in the middle of a really hard to drive around city too.
Yeah.
Like we were just there in the
One-way streets
roads.
through
Like
residential
I
areas.
could see
Yeah.
why they're getting charged for sure.
Oh, yeah. Like it seems like it would be easier just to load it on a truck and take it out of town.
Left Hand had like the grain farmer would had like a big 18-wheel tractor trailer that he would come put underneath the, because they had like a whole silo outside that you would send the spent grains so much. And he would put it under the first part of the truck, fill it up, move the truck to fill the middle part, move the truck to fill the back part. And then they even had, so with spent grain, there's still leftover wort and water in there as well. And we had a whole separate pump for that to. So all like leftover yeast or trub or whatever would be sent to another silo, and they would take that too, and it was really good fertilizer,
Oh,
apparently.
okay.
Yeah.
I guess I could see that because it's going to be pretty like protein rich. And
Yeah.
yeah, so that would give you like nitrogen and stuff for your soil. So
Even
that
at
makes
NODA,
sense.
the farmer on a smaller scale had his truck, but he would like, as the wort and water kind of drained out of the truck, he would catch it with a bucket. And he's like told me, he's like, it's just so good for the plants, like helps them grow. I was like, wow, look at you
Cool.
using
Yeah.
all of it.
Yeah, that's really neat.
It's full circle.
I have a funny story about a brewery that learned that their lautering was not good, or realized that they needed to improve their lautering process because the farmer who picked up their spent grain was like, "My cows love your spent grain the most. Like they eat it and they just love it." And like he eventually figured out it's because the grain was so sugary, and that's
Ah,
why all the cattle liked it the
that was
most.
me.
Was that you?
In the beginning of the brewery, because we were
No, I thought that was another brewery I worked
well, it
for.
might have been.
I thought it, yeah.
It might have been. That did happen.
Oh, okay.
That
So I'm
happened to
telling your own
me.
story back to you.
You might
Sorry.
be. That happened to Hardywood when we were there, not because it was so sweet, but because they started brewing a lot of cream ale with the corn. And
Oh, yeah.
the cows like started to really like the corn. It would reject the other grain. But I do think in the beginning we had some efficiency issues because I know what it was. We have to use a lot of rice hulls in our brew house because of the way it's set up, no matter what the beer is. We didn't figure that out kind of until it took a little bit. So I was like, let me go back and but yeah,
Why
there
do we think
it could be common. I'm not down that.
lautering is like in its most complete form? It's a three-step process, but not all brewers do all three steps. Everybody lauters a different way, and you can have the like a standalone lauter tun. Or you can have a combination mash lauter tun. And I think a lot of times in craft breweries, especially like when craft breweries were first, starting to open a whole lot, you would see like a maybe a 5 or 10 barrel system that was just like a two vessel system, right? And so when you see the two vessel system, that means that they have a mash lauter tun and then their boil whirlpool, whirlpool. The like the combination mash lauter tun is a British tradition, whereas the two separate lauter tun and mash tun is more of a German brewing tradition, which is really funny to me. It just seems like the I don't know I like the British brewing practice and the German brewing practices, traditionally, are so different because it's like the Germans are just very like you have a mash tun, you have a lauter tun, like it's very like kind of
Well, it
rigid.
probably comes from a lot of decoction mashing.
Right, exactly. And like with British ale brewing, it's, maybe it's also just the
Single
difference
infusion.
between, being like an ale brewer versus a lager brewer, something like that. But it like the British brewing, traditional brewing methods are definitely like, I don't know, maybe it's kind of like
It could be a
people
tax reason
have,
too.
oh,
Like,
that's a really good
because
point.
they were taxed about how much malt went into the ton, right?
Yeah,
So
like the
if you
free
have
mash
two
tonnage.
tons, you're gonna get double tax maybe. Or if you're
Maybe.
not really, because you're only using one at a time, I guess.
Right.
But I
And
don't
you would be
know.
using the same anyway.
Anyway,
Our the combination mash lauter tun is a British ale brewing practice.
And the
And
breweries in Britain also like to do single infusion mashes too. Whereas, like, I could see why more common in Germany have both, because decoction mash you can use at one vessel as a wort receiver, and also use it to boil, and so I can definitely see that.
But yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense intuitively what you're saying. So, like we said, the mash process occurs first and then it's followed by the lauter. And our combination mash lauter tun has the false bottom that Rachel talked about and screen plates that will allow the wort to pass through while keeping the spent grain in the tun. So, like she said, like a false bottom is just that. It's sits a few, you know, a few inches above the bottom of the tun, so that way it's all of the wort, there's room for the wort to come out underneath. One of the drawbacks of having a combination mash lauter tun is that you can't like brew into, you can't start brewing your next batch until your first batch is finished and the tun has been grained out and, you know, and cleaned and ready to go. If you have separate ones, like as soon as you transfer over to the lauter, you can clean your mash tun and you can get a second brew started. There's a lot of reasons why people would want a two vessel system versus a four vessel system. Most of it's going to be like the size, the footprint of their brewery, and also money. So when we're talking about like smaller breweries, our mash tuns are usually about 4 to 6 feet in diameter and allow for a grain bed of about 4 feet. For larger breweries, infusion tuns may be 30 feet in diameter and they can allow for a grain bed depth of 8 feet. But there's really, there is geometry involved in how a lauter tun is constructed because of that. Like you need to have a somewhat shallow grain bed to be able to sparge, you know, and get wash everything really well. So if you had like, think about if your lauter tun was like a cylinder conical vessel, you know, like the fermenters, that would take forever. You wouldn't get a good rinse, you know, you wouldn't, that would just be very inefficient. Your lauter tun needs to be like wide and shallow. So the actual bottom, the true bottom of the tun will be essentially flat. And then your false bottom has, there's a couple different kinds. I'm not going to go into all the different kinds of false bottoms you can get. Just know that there are, you know, you can have screens, there's different things. And I will say, when I was learning how to homebrew, I learned from this guy who all of his homebrew setup was from back in the day when you couldn't buy homebrew equipment and you just had to like figure out how to make it. And his lauter tun was a keg that he had cut the top off of. And then, you know, those like industrial, like floor waxing things that are like, it's kind of like a big, it's not a sponge, but it's kind of like a hairbrush, you know, with like bristles, it's really dense bristles.
Okay,
You
I
know, they're
kind of
pretty,
envision this.
they're pretty thick. Or like, you know, when you go to like a car wash and they've got those things. So it's like a floor waxing thing. And he just, and they fit perfectly into the keg. So his lauter tun was like several of those stacked up, and so that would catch most of the grain, and then he would drain the wort out of the bottom of the keg.
I like
Look,
it.
homebrewers
Tons of
are
way to make
engineers. Yeah.
tons of ways to make beer. I mean, even
Right.
everything that we're describing to you today is not even what we do at our brewery.
So when we're talking about the false bottom too, it's important. So to visualize it, your slot should be narrow enough that the large grain particles can't get through, but not so narrow that they get plugged really easily. So it's kind of like a delicate balance there. When we're talking about a single lauter tun, that is basically the same kind of setup, except it's a standalone, and your mash is transferred via pump from the mash to the lauter. The lauter tun, if you have a single vessel, or sorry, if you have a standalone lauter tun, it's going to be filled from the bottom, so that way you're reducing any kind of hot side aeration. If you believe in that, we still have to come back to that.
We believe in that.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
Right. Your grain bed in a single vessel lauter tun will be a lot shallower than it is in the mash, just to, again, to ease that wort runoff. When we're talking about lauter tuns, we also need to just mention mash filters exist. They are not lauter tuns, but they
Good point.
are, you know, the spent grain, it's kind of like an accordion
Yeah.
where it just goes between all these plates and just gets squeezed really hard and all of the wort comes out of the bottom. So that is, mash filters are like, give you the best extraction, the best efficiency, but they are extremely expensive. And you also have to have a hammer mill if you're going to have a mash filter, because you're basically making like almost like flour out of your
And that's
bark.
typically a very large size brewery thing to do.
Yes. Yeah. I think there's only like a couple of craft breweries
Like
who have
really large,
one.
yeah.
Yeah.
Like Coors, like the breweries that will brew to volume. So it's also like
Yes.
you with lautering, we're doing this like delicate process of like getting really good wort, and we don't take a certain wort that's under a certain gravity when it gets close to the end. With, you know, there's a limit of what's considered good and what's considered astringent wort. You know, it's a very delicate process where you cannot crash this bed, or if you do, you risk like what's called channeling and the wort picking little different channels to go through, but not getting all the extraction that it could while it's doing this transfer process. But with the mash filter, you're literally squeezing all of it out. So typically the like Coors, for example, I just knew someone that worked there. They had a mash filter and it would squeeze all the wort out. Didn't matter. Just all the liquid. And then they would brew or boil to volume. So they would get like really high gravity or all the gravity and probably just boil and add water to the high gravity brewing. That's a little different, but in a homebrew setting or a shoot, even Sam Adams is not going to be doing that, you know? So like, it would be, you don't need to do that as a home brewer. I would think that would be very hard and expensive.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
I like
Although
the other guy's solution.
there's going to be some home brewer, there is a home brewer out there who has built a mash filter
You are probably
for their setup.
100%
Yes.
correct.
Only
I
for the purpose of I saw that this exists and I want to
need to
build
do
it.
it. I understand that feeling.
Yeah, so that's going to be our construction of different types of water tuns. And before we get to the actual process, Rachel, why don't you explain what your lautering process is like?
We have a single vessel brew house. It's you do everything in the one vessel. So it's kind of like a big brew in a bag, but it's a big 3 barrel vessel that has a basket inside with a false bottom on it. And we throw all of the grain and like 80% of the water into that for the mash. We also have to, it's also not in the shape of anything that you mentioned. It is more of a conical shape where it is taller than it is wider. Not by much. So when we lauter, you know, we're throwing in the grain, the water, we're mixing it up, letting it sit there for an hour, and then we slowly pull the basket up. We will, as the basket starts to drain and you see the exposed grain on top, we will do a sparge like you would in the process that we're describing today, but not quite as much as a normal traditional vet would do. Like it's like more like 20% of the water is our sparge. Versus probably like 45% of the water in your normal sparging.
Oh, you know what? If any of you would like to see Rachel's setup, you've probably already seen it because in the picture we used for the podcast, Rachel is in their system and I'm stirring her. So if you've seen
And
that
that's how you
picture,
make
which you
beer.
probably have, yeah, Rachel actually, so you did leave out the part where you were in the kettle the whole time. Yeah, like that frog.
That's that. That's that special. That's why we so taste so good. That's why our beer's so good. So we're winning.
Rachel's just in there with her hands, just like the winemakers with their feet.
My feet too.
I can't believe we forgot to
Why
mention
not?
that whole part.
Sweat.
So when we're doing lautering, that's going to be a three-step process, and it's going to be the mash out, the vorlauf, and then sparging. And not every brewer does every single step. And I can give you an example. Like when I brew at home, I use brew in a bag. And so my mash out is just me starting the boil in the kettle. But when we're talking about the mash out, that means that we're raising our mash temperature high enough that we denature all of the enzymes in the mash. So we've decided that the mash has accomplished the goal we want it to accomplish, and then we just want to get that heated up so it stops. And one thing to keep in mind when you're doing mash out is that once you've mashed out, once you've denatured those enzymes, the sugar composition of your wort is set and it doesn't change unless you're adding, like
Sugar
corn
in the
sugar or
boil.
something like that. But if you're not adding anything, it's set and it's not, you're not going to get more sugars out of it. Again, assuming that you're not adding actual sugars. The mashing out will also reduce the wort's viscosity, so that's going to make lautering easier. Rachel mentioned rice hulls earlier. Like there are a lot of tools that brewers have to make sure that the wort is not too viscous, to make sure that it lauters well. Like we mentioned, you can either use a recirculation system, which you have on your co-pilot system, right? You have, is it a Herms that you have?
It's just a pump.
You can also just add boiling water. You can heat the sparge water hotter than normal. You can pull, basically, you can do a decoction mash. You can pull a portion of the mash out, heat it by boiling,
Oh, you
and
mean
then put it back.
heating for our system? Did you mean
No.
heat? Oh, Vorlef.
For your co-pilot.
I'm sorry. Yes, there's a Herm. Yes,
Yeah.
it's like a kettle that holds water for the hot water for the brewing, but it has the coil inside of it that we send the wort through. Just to explain,
Right. Yes.
what a
Yeah.
Herm's is. But yes, but our big system, we just have like it comes out of the bottom into a pump, out of a pump through some hoses, and
Right.
right back through.
Right. So that's our mashout. So we've denatured all of our enzymes. Our wort composition is set. The next thing we're going to do is Vorlauf, which I did not know this, but Vorlauf means running ahead in German. So
Thought it meant
maybe,
research, but that makes more sense.
yeah, well, in the future I'll be like, oh,
Running
you know
ahead.
what, Rachel, I just need to like get this one last thing. So you Vorlauf and I'll catch up.
Like it.
So, we were talking about our false bottom, and inevitably some smaller particles of your grain is going to get through that false bottom and be in like in the bottom of in the wort. You want to transfer as little of that as possible. You don't want those grain particles in there because that's going to give you tannins, it'll give you lipids. So you need to recirculate that wort, which is going to be the Vorlauf. That means that you're going to take those cloudy first runnings. So you're going to open the bottom of your lauter tun or however you do it, drain some of that out, and then kind of sprinkle it or pour it on top of your grain bed. And like Rachel had mentioned earlier, you want to sprinkle it. You don't just want to like take, like a big measuring cup and just dump it right on your bed because that can compact the bed. It can make the channeling. So it's like lautering is kind of a gentle process because you want to make sure that that grain bed kind of stays fluffy and the water has lots of avenues to choose from in terms of running through your wort and rinsing off those sugars.
That makes a good point. So that's it is very much like on a homebrew side too. And like, but if you have like some pumps, like for okay, for us at the brewery, we actually do our Vorloff the whole time we're mashing for both systems. So we don't like it is very traditional for bigger breweries to do the mash, then let's say you have the mash lauter, it's one system to like let it mash, then spend 15, 20 extra minutes clarifying it, and then go to your lauter. So that's the actual step is like you're mashing, then you're Vorloffing, you're clarifying, and then you start your lauter. We just do that at the same time because our system is just kind of set up for that, and it just saves us 20 minutes,
Right.
really, at the end of the day. You can do
Yeah.
it either way, it just kind of depends how your system is set up.
Right. And so you Vorlauf as many times as you need to until your turbidity is no longer there. And I have a note on my outline, or until I run out of patience, because I am not a patient person. And I am one of those people, that as soon as I come into work for the day, I'm already wondering how much longer I have until it's lunchtime. And then after lunchtime, it's like, how much time until this day is over? Brewing for me is the same way. I understand the importance. I appreciate the importance of doing a very slow Vorlauf and a very complete Vorlauf. I really do. Yeah. So I usually run out of patience and I'm just like, you know what? It's fine. It's fine. Let's just
No,
go. I'm just done.
15, 20 minutes is standard for the
Right.
bigger breweries out there.
Sure. And but whenever your turbidity
Really.
gets to where you're happy with it. And again, I understand. I understand. Stand. And if you have the patience to do a
Hour and a
very
half is ridiculous.
slow Vorlauf, very slow sparging or whatever, that's fine. Great for you. I do not. Vorlauffing, again, that's usually traditionally going to be, as you may imagine, given the origin of the word, is going to be done in German brewing and American brewing. British brewers don't typically, or traditional British brewing, they may skip that Vorlauf step.
I didn't know that.
So then the last step we have is sparging. And one of the things I love the most about sparging is as a home brewer, we used to have, and a lot of home brewers will use a sparge arm, which is only pronounced correctly if you say it like a pirate. So every time I've home brewed, it would be like normal, 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 well, normal for me, and then be like, where's the sparge arm? Sparging is when we're going to spray hot water onto the mash to rinse out those residual sugars. The wort will run through. We'll have quite a bit of the sugary water, but there's still going to be some sugars left on the grain. So basically the sparge is just rinsing as much of that residual sugar off of the spent grain as possible. So once our wort is clear enough, you know, we've started our runoff to the boil kettle. Oh, this is where I saw that the runoff is a very slow process because the goal is to collect enough wort at the correct gravity with as little grain left as possible.
Mm-hmm.
If you run the wort too quickly, take it from your pal, Jen. This does happen. It can cause the grain bed to collapse, which makes what Rachel was talking about earlier. It makes those channels when you have channeling instead of the water kind of washing through everything and rinsing it away. It's just going like straight down.
Yeah.
Right?
You're not getting everything that you could if it's doing a consistent wash through.
Yes, exactly. So you want to run off your wort until you have the desired volume. You have reached your target gravity or pH. Your kettle is already at the required gravity. Ideally you want all of that, but if you're looking for, you know, a specific volume, I've done that before. Like I do that when I homebrew because most of the time I'm just homebrewing like for myself. So if I get the volume I need, it's like, okay, that's fine. You know, or like mm-hmm. maybe I don't care as much about the gravity or, you know, like if
sure.
it's, and that's also usually like when I do my recipes, I'll write them at the high end of whatever that gravity range is. So that way, if it's lower, like I'm still in style and it's.
I would say, you know, for sparging, on like if you do want consistent product or you know something like when I worked at Noda, we had a way that you could just check what was going into that kettle at that moment, so you know when it got to a certain level to like start checking, and anything that a gravity, we're talking about checking the gravity of the wort, and anything that got to 0.08 or below, or 1008, sorry, not 0.08, 0.08, 0.008, sorry, 1008, anything that was 1008 or below was a no-go. That was not going to go in the kettle. So things were pretty much set up. So you got everything you need, except for something like jam session. That always ended up a little higher. That got water. That beer always got water before the boil. So that was something that's very common to do too, is to like help with your gravity. But going back to the sparging, you know, the temperature of the sparge water is important. You do want to keep that around 168 to, you know, not really higher than 170, because it too hot of water can bring out astringency in those malts. It will also denature any renaming alpha amylase if you didn't do a mash out, but that could increase the risk of a residual starch in the wort. And there is like a little bit of a pH factor. Typically your water should, brewing water, be okay anyways, but you want to keep the pH of that water below 5.6 as well. If you are, you know, brewing the same beer all the time, that can be important to keep out. And also like the reason like the sparge is so important, you know, we have our lauter, you know, we've made our mash, we've done our Vorloff, we started our lauter, but we can't just let, you know, that if we let it go, it's going to soak it dry. So you got to keep a good pressure between what the water is going on versus the wort going out. And that differential pressure, if it comes too high, can crash your bed. And when you have a fancy system, like Left Hand would, you could see it was kind of awful for your mental load of getting everything right. But like in the system, you could see the differential pressure, like it would try to, you know, it's a fancy little system. So you could see like a graph, like go up and down. And you're like, shit, too fast, too fast. Like, and then you have to go down. You're like, shit, got to get it right. You know, it's a balancing act. It's a balancing act.
Right, exactly. So yeah, your the runoffs rate is going to, should be matching your sparge rate. Usually like for me as a home brewer, that just means like making sure that there's like a couple of inches above the grain bed of the sparge water. That tells me that, yeah, like nothing's getting dried out.
It's a continuous sparge. Like there's different types of sparges as well. Like
that's true.
What we just described is like a continuous, because we have water continuously going, but we could do batch sparging, which you mentioned earlier, which is basically a homebrew level thing to do. You kind of, as Jen mentioned, pulled the wort out into a container, but not you, and then dumping it back into the top, not like a straight dump. You got to be careful about it. But that's, you know, two types of sparging. You know, you got to determine what's best for your system and what you can do.
Right. So yeah, fly sparging or batch sparging. For homebrewers, that's usually the two that you're going to do. And we've We have talked extensively about things that stick our mashes. This is the origin of a stuck mash or stuck sparge. This happens when your grain bed compacts, like we've been talking about, and the channels through which the wort are flowing close. And for me, this is like if you have a stuck mash, it's done. Like anytime I have finished.
Yeah,
Okay,
well,
so I say
not
that.
doing that
We've talked about my patience level,
one.
and I have said I don't have a lot of patience. And I have had brew days where I get a stuck mash, and in my brain, it's just like, dump it all out. I'm done. Like, fuck this, which is also usually because up until recently, I got a new mill, but I would also have to fight with my mill.
Yeah, it's
And then
already
it was
starting
like,
out by.
like I was gonna start by 8, and now it's 8:45, and now the mash
Yeah.
is stuck. And so it's just like, ah. But yeah,
I get
so
that.
your stuck mash, stuck sparge can be caused by your grain not being milled properly, drying off the wort too quickly, or if you're using high protein grains. And like, you know, like Rachel mentioned, you all use rice hulls in all of your recipes because of your equipment. But that's why a lot of times you'll hear of people using rice hulls when if you're using like a lot of wheat, a lot of rye, a lot of oats, like anything with a high beta glucan level, that can stick up your mash.
And also those like wheat doesn't have like a husk,
Right.
whereas barley malt does. And that husk is really important as a transfer agent to help you get a good water, good runoff. So rice hulls, we use it like a lot of times breweries will use it when they're using a significant portion of wheat or rye. We will use it in our brewery no matter what is in there because of the way it's shaped.
Right.
So there could be different reasons, but they will not impart flavor or
Right.
gravity or aroma. They're simply there just to help you transfer.
Right. Exactly. Obviously, if you have like a stuck sparge, you're going to have loss of extract efficiency, which means you're going to have lower gravity, lower ABV. So, one way you can clear a stuck sparge is by underletting. And this is where basically you're just pumping water back through the port where your wort has been coming up to kind of try to like lift up your grain bed and kind of gently set it back down again. And then you recirculate, you do the Vorloff again,
Because
and
you're
then
getting
you can kind of
cloudy wort
start.
at that point.
Yeah,
So you need to
exactly. So you
re-clear
can,
it.
yeah, and then you can start running it off
Yeah,
again.
been there. At every
Yeah,
brewery, you've always deal with something.
it's very
Another
frustrating.
most water tuns too on a bigger scale will have like rakes
Yes, thank you.
that you can use to like one, the rake is there as a way when you're pumping the mash over, you spin the rake so you can kind of get it all consistent and doesn't just stay in one spot and get stuck or something. But two, it's very useful if you do have a stuck mash, you can try it. It's not like underletting first is the way to go. And then we start to slowly move the rake like as slow as you can, because again, you don't want to like disturb everything in this grain bed. But if you find yourself channeling, it could be a good way to solve it. And then the
Right.
rake also acts has a paddle on it, like a grain out paddle. So for the bigger system, this at once you're done, all you have left is the spent grain in there. The rake typically has like a paddle that will lower down and help you push out that spent grain out of that water tun. Again, this is like a big system. Like even I don't have that. Mine, I just pull up
Right.
that basket and dump it into a trash can. But they're like, just to give you an idea of like picturing the vessel with the false bottom, with the rakes, like it's like a long rake that goes from one diameter to the other that kind of spins around and has like a, they're kind of like squiggly rakes. Like it's
Yeah.
like one long bar that holds the rakes that go down and
Yeah,
it
they're like mini
squiggly.
augers. Yeah, or like corkscrews.
Yeah, there you go. That's a better way to think about it.
Yeah, and if you are a woman who ever does any kind of a brew day, you can be guaranteed that you will have a picture of you throwing hops into the kettle and a picture of you graining out. Like those are the
Or
two
mashing
standard
it.
pictures.
Or mashing it.
Oh yeah, mashing in. So
But
there's
there's
three standard
not much
pictures.
else
Right.
to do.
Right. But
Honestly. You're
yeah.
like, here's a picture of you being sweaty down here putting
Yeah.
these part. How about you fix this pump? I'll take a picture of that. Pitching yeast, maybe pitching yeast. It's not
Yeah.
much to do. There's good, you have your photo moments.
Right. But yeah, so like those three photo moments are the only things. So yeah, that's a lottery. I think. Do you have anything else to add?
We could touch just kind of real quick on party guile. or polyguile. Remember when we polyed?
I do.
Partyguile, just to bring it up real quick, it's just kind of like, it's not really a form of lottery, but it's kind of like in lottering twice. It was really common for British brewers to produce 2 to 3 beers out of one mash.
Right.
So,
and Scottish too. That's why we have true. Scottish heavy, export heavy, and light.
Yeah. You would get, you know, your first mash would produce most of your fermentable sugars. And then instead of, you know, like you would probably lotter like we just explained, or whatever your process in your brewing house was. But then you, instead of getting all that grain out and lotter again, but this time your fermentable sugars are going to be a lot lower in gravity. And then you could, you know, sometimes even push it to a third time, which was very common to do 2 or 3 of these mashes. You would have different levels of alcohol in each of these beers, and they were typically made for different status levels of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Belgian brewers used it a lot too. So like monks. So you would have like the strong beer, and then like by the end, you had the table beer,
which was typically like reserved for the working people because it had low alcohol, had nutrients. A lot of times water wasn't safe. You know, this was a easy beer to drink all day. And then you had your higher alcohol beer that might have been for like royalty at the time, you know, during that time. And I know that's not too much to do with lottery, but it was in my notes. So I felt like.
No, I think that's a good, definitely a good add on because it is.
And, you know, they might not have sparged. I think it was just grab all the wort you can from this first warning. No sparge. Do it again. Do it again. I could be wrong about that, but my gut tells me they might not have sparge that much.
When I've done a partyguile in the past, it's running off the wort and then sparging.
I don't think
and
I've ever done a
that's how
guile.
You get that's how you get your lower volume.
Oh, okay.
It's instead basically like you just run it off and then
smash
basically do
with your
do
sparge
your,
or
yeah,
yeah
no,
yeah
you
just
don't
do your
even
sparge yeah
right yeah you don't
yeah
mash
yeah
again, you just sparge.
One time Jen and I did a polyguile.
Yes, we did an episode about that.
Yeah. Which you can listen to, but we mashed, we lautered, we cleaned out the mash tun, we took the wort, we put it back in the mash tun, and then we mashed again, and then we lautered again, and it was so cool.
It's so fun, and
so cool.
Yes, we did an episode on it. We wrote an article about it in Zymergy. I think in Zymergy. Of course, as soon as it posted, like all the home brewers are in the comments, don't you mean partyguile? No. Did you read what we said? You need to read the article because that's explicitly explained. But yeah, I was like, do you mean partyguile? I think you mean partyguile. I've heard of partyguile before. It's like,
read something new.
Right.
Jesus. Do anything in life. Sorry.
That is lottering.
Very good episode. It was very informative.
Yeah.
You could take this episode, write it down on your Master Cicerone essay test, and you'd be good to go. Yeah.
Maybe.
But still find something.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we think that. And then it's like,
yeah.
30, you didn't mention this one.
You
thing.
Get 30 points for this one out of 100.
Right.
Yeah. You didn't mention one thing.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for your, I guess, patience as life has been lifing for us. So it's
and
been a little bit tougher. Yes, and your suggestions. It's been a little bit tougher the last couple of months for us to be able to consistently record episodes, but hopefully some of that will be lifting soon as Rachel is almost finished with the Master Cicerone.
Oh my God. I better fucking be. I'll tell you what. I just need 5 points. Not the same points. It's going to be a whole different test, but whatever. Just need 5 points. I need to memorize my rap. We'll have that out for you soon. Because
oh, hell yeah.
I should just go in with all the words this time.
Oh my God. What if you did all of your orals as a rep?
Should I get bonus points? I better.
I would give you bonus points.
You would have to. You would be so delighted. All right. We'll see how it goes. I wish you could be my proctor. I mean, I don't. I know it wouldn't be good, but like, it'd be fun. I'm getting ready. I'm getting excited now.
Yeah. My name is Rachel, and I'm here to say.
My rap was way better
I know.
Than that.
I can talk about cast
I
every
made you give
day.
Me I made you give me a beat, you know?
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. And that is also in the annals of False Bottom Girls.
Yeah, it's there somewhere. I think I did it.
Yeah, you did.
I did. Study tools. Gotta have your study tools.
Thank you, everyone. You have suggestions for future episodes. We would love to hear from you. You can email us. You can reach out to us on Instagram or Facebook at False Bottom Girls. The email is falsebottomgirls@gmail.com. We are very bad at replying to you if you do email us, so I'm sorry for that. You can also visit our website, falsebottomgirls.com. We won the lottery.
This has been False Bottom Girls.
And we make the Bruin world go round.